Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and welcome to episode number 12 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, the podcast designed to help smart businesses with an interest in innovation and the Internet of Things become even more productive. Now, this week's guest is Troy Dean from WP Elevation and Video User Manuals. Now, Troy is one of my mentors, so I'm really excited to have him on the podcast today. And we spoke a lot about serving the customer and serving the customer better than anybody else can do, but doing that in a way that is sustainable and profitable in the long term. So I'm really excited, as I said, to have Troy on the podcast, and let's move on to today's innovation tip. This week's innovation tip is start early. Get some testing underway for your new product ideas or service ideas, and test them with your ideal customers, your best ideal customers, and get their feedback. Don't invest a lot of resources in time or money up front before you get that feedback from your customers. Then adapt the product or service accordingly. Now, this is a classic lean startup model where you don't invest a lot of time or resources up front until you start to get that input from the customers about what will work and what will not work. Improve the product as you go along, and when it's ready for prime time, then sink the resources and time and money into it to make a successful launch. Now, Troy, in our podcast today, talks a lot about the lean startup model. So let's find out how Troy and his business partner applied that lean startup model to get WP Elevation up and running. Before we meet Troy, a quick competition announcement. Today's prize is sponsored by InnovaBiz, and it is a copy of the book, The Year Without Pants by Scott Birkin. Now, The Year Without Pants is all about WordPress.com and, as the author puts it, the future of work. So stick around later on in the interview where you can learn how you can go into the drawer to win that prize. Now, without further ado, let's go into the innovation hive and get the buzz from Troy Dean.
This is the InnovaBuzz podcast, helping smart businesses be even more innovative.
Hi, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really pleased to have here with me today, all the way from St Kilda in St Kilda Road in Melbourne, which is only about 60 k's up the road from where I am, Troy Dean from Video User Manuals and WP Elevation. Now, I'm really pleased to have Troy here with me because he's largely responsible for me taking this podcasting adventure and beginning it and running with it. So it's a real privilege to have you on the podcast, Troy.
Well, thanks for having me, Jürgen. It's interesting, actually, I interviewed a guy yesterday on my podcast by the name of Ed Dale, who is probably the reason that my podcast exists in the first place. So it's kind of a nice loop that's going on here.
Okay, that's great. Yeah, well, it's a real privilege to have you on the podcast. And, of course, for those people that don't know, WP Elevation, I think your pitch is it's the first business coaching program designed specifically to help WordPress or website consultants attract better clients and better projects and so on. But I guess my spin on that, because I'm part of that, is it's a global mastermind of around about 130 to 150 people. It's a fantastic community that are all supportive of one another. And if people come to us at InnovaBiz and we don't know how to do something, then I can ask that community and there'll be at least a handful of people that will know the most obscure things, and all of them right through, you know, everywhere in the world are really helpful and will go out of their way to solve each other's problems. So that's real fantastic.
Oh, that's good to hear. I haven't heard it referred to as a global mastermind before, but I think I might have to put that one in the back pocket. I like the sound of that.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, you're also responsible for Video User Manuals, which is the original, the best, and the only way to teach your clients to use WordPress.
That's right.
So I've been listening to your podcast.
Excellent.
Yeah. So before we learn more about Troy, about Video User Manuals, WP Elevation, and his journey and how he, you know, the innovative things he does within those businesses. I've got a little competition prize today that I think's quite appropriate, and it's a copy of a book, The Year Without Pants, which is the story of WordPress.com and the future of work, as it's called, and it's written by Scott Birkin. So for those people that don't know and have been living under a rock, there are over 50 million websites on the World Wide Web that are powered by WordPress. That's about 20% or more of the web. And the force behind the software that drives that is a little company that has about 120 employees called Automattic. And The Year Without Pants is the story of Scott Birkin's year where he actually worked within Automattic and learned all about them. And he describes this company as you know, having as big an influence on the internet as Google and Facebook do, even though they're much, much smaller.
Yeah, it's a fabulous book, actually. I read it, I think, while I was traveling overseas, and it's really engaging. And it's just a, you know, Scott came from a pretty kind of traditional corporate startup world and entered the world of Automattic and, you know, just had to adapt to a whole new way of working remotely. And it's an inspirational book. I love it. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Yeah, it is really fascinating. And also it talks a lot about, because most of those, well, actually all of those employees work remotely from wherever they want to be, which is quite fascinating and presents some challenges that you know, most traditional companies don't necessarily have. So, well, stay tuned for later for how to enter the competition later on in the interview. We'll see what Troy has in mind for us there. I haven't actually asked him what he wants us to do.
We'll work something out.
Yeah, but before we get onto that, Troy, let's take you right back to when you were a young child and find out a little bit more about you. So, when you were a young child, what was your first big ambition? What did you want to be?
I wanted to be I wanted to be an actor or a rock star.
Okay.
And in hindsight, when I think about it, I used to spend a lot of time, you know, when I was like 6 years old, jumping up and down on the bed in front of the mirror with, you know, something as a microphone, pretending that I was, you know, the lead singer of Kiss, or, you know, that I was in a Rolling Stones film clip, or, you know, I was just fascinated by music, film clips and actors. You know, I was a huge fan of James Dean, and you know, when I was in late primary school or early high school, I was a huge fan of Johnny Depp, and I was fascinated by how magnetic these characters and these personalities were, and how much people, I was kind of fascinated by the celebrity and the attraction that these people had en masse. But in hindsight, I think as I've kind of grown up a little bit, I've realized that what I really wanted to do was to connect with lots of people rather than connecting with individuals. I wanted to be in front of large groups of people connecting en masse, because there's just a real buzz from being in front of a large group of people and having that connection. It's something that's, for me, it's like a drug. It's quite addictive.
And perhaps making a difference, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. I mean, the interesting thing about that is, well, James Dean died very young, of course, and I remember I was probably only a child at that time, and I was kind of devastated when I heard that. And then Johnny Depp, he's done some interesting things lately, but he kind of went off the radar there for a long time, and I think he got fed up with the whole acting milieu, didn't he?
Yeah, and he's been one of those guys that's chosen really interesting roles. I mean, he's had some duds as well, but, you know, he's... character in Pirates of the Caribbean, he freely admits, is kind of modeled on the guitar player for the Rolling Stones, Keith Richards.
Yeah, Keith Richards.
It's like, you know,
right,
if Keith Richards was a pirate, this is how he'd be. You know? I just love that. I love that take on it. And in fact, I think Keith was in one of the Pirates of the Caribbean movies.
Yeah.
He made a cameo. Yeah.
Yeah. So so you did actually go into music at some stage, didn't you, and into radio?
Yeah, I did. Well, I did a little bit of acting when I was a kid, and when I was a teenager, did some, you know, bit parts and some commercials and stuff, and then and did a bit of, you know, quite a bit of theatre. Started studying theatre at university, and then discovered, you know, music and rock and roll and pubs and beer and girls, and kind of let the acting thing go, and joined bands and was playing rock and roll for, you know, sort of most of my 20s, and then towards my late 20s, I got into voiceovers, so voicing television commercials on radio and voicing commercials on radio and television. And the good thing about being a voiceover artist is you still get to perform. It's not a live environment, but you get to perform, but you're completely anonymous. Not like you can still go out for dinner with your partner and no one recognizes you, you know. Yeah. Whereas if you're an actor on a TV show or you're a famous musician, you go out to dinner and people want to get your autograph all the time. But that's if you're the voice of, you know, ANZ or the voice of Telstra, no one knows, you know, no one's got a clue. So it's kind of a sweet little gig doing voiceovers.
Yeah, that's great. There is an interesting story there, though, isn't there, though, about the Cadbury jingle?
There is, yeah. So I sang the Cadbury jingle. Well, which part of the story do you want? I sang the Cadbury jingle, Wouldn't It Be Nice, and it's based on a Beach Boys track, of course. And I got the gig, and I'd been gigging the night before, and I was, you know, I'd probably had a few too many to drink, and I woke up at 9 o'clock in the morning, and my agent rang me, and she said, "Oh, you've got this gig today, going into the studio to sing the Cadbury jingle. It's, you know, wouldn't it be good by the Beach Boys?" And they were singing "Wouldn't It Be Nice If the World Was Cadbury." Mm-hmm. And so I instantly freaked out because I thought, "There's no way I'm going to be able to pull this off." I had to, you know, I mean, I was really husky from the night before, but also it's just such a Brian Wilson's melodies are just amazing, and it's such a exact kind of melody. Anyway, I spent about 4 hours in the studio recording the jingle, and it went really well, and it went to air, and it was, you know, shown in Australia and New Zealand and Singapore and in cinemas, and it turned into a nice little gig for me. And when I met who is now my wife, she was doing a few voiceovers as well, and she discovered that I do voiceovers, and then in conversation she discovered that I sang the Cadbury jingle, and I think that was it. I think that was what got the girl. She was just completely, you know, completely kind of, because she loved that commercial, and her sister used to sing it every time it came on the TV, and here she was, you know, out on a date having dinner with the guy that sang it. So
So you got your fame and your rock star status there.
That's right, exactly.
Well, that's actually a pretty important way, though, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It is, definitely.
A little bit more deeper than just a lot of anonymous fans out in the world. Yeah,
that's right. Exactly.
Yeah. So when did you kind of deviate from that path and go into design and marketing and then websites?
Well, it's interesting. You know, I got an internet connection back in 1996 when I was living, '95 when I was living in Adelaide, and it was like I had a 7.4K dial-up modem, or no, 7.7K dial-up modem. And I remember dialing in for the first time and hearing that squelchy sound like a fax machine. And I remember the first website I ever browsed in my Netscape Navigator browser was the Melrose Place episode guide.
Okay.
Because every Tuesday night, we used to get together with a bunch of friends and watch Beverly Hills 90210 and Melrose Place. And I knew that the Melrose Place season was ahead in the States.
Yeah.
So I wanted to get the episode guide so that the following week I could just spoil the plot and tell everyone what was coming up. Oh, don't worry about her. She dies next week anyway. So, and I remember logging onto the Melrose Place episode guide and then going, have to make a coffee and, you know, come back half an hour later while the screen was still loading. Yeah. Those were the days. We've come a long way in 20 years, I tell you.
That's right.
Anyway, then in sort of my mid to late 20s, I was just playing gigs and doing voiceovers, and I had a lot of spare time on my hands, and I just was playing around on the internet and was starting to build websites for bands that I was playing in, and some venues that I was playing at they were asking me to build websites, and it was all sort of done in Flash back then. And then I migrated to Dreamweaver, and I was doing table-based design, which was a gorgeous thing. And then somebody said to me once, a buddy of mine who's a cinematographer actually said, oh man, I'd love to pay you to build me a proper website. And I was really offended. I was like, what do you mean, dude? I built you a proper website. He's like, I'd like you to build me a proper website. And so I said, okay, well, if you're going to pay me, then I better learn how to do this properly. And I just started reading, and I started Googling. And I actually remember the first time I saw Google would have been, you know, late 90s. And I logged onto this website, and the simplicity, the user, I didn't even know what user experience was back then, but all I knew is that I could get what I wanted a lot quicker than if I used Lycos or AltaVista or Yahoo. And that was, for me, that was a huge opening of the floodgates. I since then have just been fascinated by the user experience, and it's just been a wild ride for the last sort of 13 or 14 years, just delving into the web and internet and marketing and everything that it offers. And it's great. I love it.
And so you built that website for the videographer.
I did,
and then started building a lot more from there.
Yeah, and then it went from there. And I remember one of the first things I realized is if I build this website for these creative people who go out and get work on new jobs, or maybe they shoot, you know, video at a new wedding, they're gonna want to add that new stuff to their website, and I don't want to have to be doing that. So I remember I wrote a content management system in Notepad on my PC.
Yeah,
taught myself PHP and MySQL, and wrote this content management system so these guys could manage their own website. And it was horrible, but you know, it worked. And then very quickly discovered what, you know, content management systems were available on the internet, and of course then it was just, you know, the rest is history. You know, it's just been an amazing ride since then.
Yeah. So when did you first discover WordPress?
So I was. It's funny. My current business partner Brian. I was dating a girl at the time who was working with his wife, or the girl that he was dating at the time, who is now his wife. And we all went away for an Easter weekend to Port Macquarie in Sydney. And I was reading these PHP cookbooks and CSS cookbooks, and he was like, "Oh, what do they teach you in that stuff?" And I was showing him some examples, and I had no idea what I was doing, but I was just trying to consume as much as possible. And I kept asking him about uploading multiple images at a time into a content management system rather than doing it one at a time. How can you select multiple images, and what's the PHP script for uploading multiple images at a time? And he kept saying, "I don't know, man, I just use WordPress." And I was like, "You're lazy, man. I thought you were a developer." And every question I asked him, he'd like, "Oh, I'm not sure, I just use WordPress." Anyway, I was like, he said, "You should just use WordPress." I was like, "I'm not using WordPress. I'm gonna write my own thing." And then eventually I had a bit of spare time, and I thought, well, I'm going to check this WordPress thing out that Brian suggested. And I downloaded it, and within half an hour, I realized that I just achieved in half an hour what had taken me the last 6 weeks to achieve in this content management system. And that was it. And it was, I think it was 2.2, version 2.2 was the first WordPress I downloaded. And I downloaded Joomla and Mambo, or Drupal and Mambo, the same day, whichever ones they were called back then. I downloaded them the same day. I couldn't even get them to work, but I managed to get to the WordPress login screen, and I thought, right, I'm onto something here. And I managed to log in and look at the dashboard and went, I can figure this out. I reckon I can figure this out. And the big aha moment for me was, I reckon I can use this as a way to build websites quicker, which is going to make potentially building a business out of this profitable. Because doing it the way I've been doing it for the last 6 weeks is not profitable unless someone's paying me 50 grand to build a website, which, you know, at that point they weren't going to. So if I was kind of in that, when I first started off in that kind of low-end website market, I needed something to be able to churn these things out quickly, and WordPress was just the thing that works pretty much out of the box.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fascinating, isn't it? I remember, I think I saw it first in 2003 or something, and it was my son at the time who was... he would have been 20, and he was running his own little hobby blog, and I came across it, and I thought, well, that's, you know, and I always thought, well, he's a geek, so that's beyond me. And then when I started off in the websites game, invested a lot of money in a custom, you know, proprietary content management system that was really clunky and hard to work with, and it had all these limitations, and you couldn't do a blog on it, which was the thing that actually turned me back to WordPress, because eventually clients that I had started talking to me, well, we want to do a blog as well. And I looked around and saw WordPress, and I thought, and so we did blogs with WordPress, and I thought, hang on a minute, it's much easier to upload images like you say there and rearrange pages and that. And then I thought, well, you must be able to actually do standard websites with this whole thing. Why have the two systems? It's fascinating. So when did you embark on writing video user manuals?
Well, it's funny because I kind of figured that the first thing is I need to have a content management system that people can use to upload their own content, because I don't want to do that. Then I discovered WordPress, and I said, great, so now we've got a content management system that people can use, and I don't have to help them manage their content. The very next thing that happened was I was about to hand a website over to a client, and I foresaw this. I'm going to have to train this client how to use WordPress, and they're going to have a lot of questions. And if I get my next client, which I intended to get more clients, yeah. I'm going to have to go through the same process again. So how do we systemize this so that I don't, you know, because there's nothing more painfully boring than teaching, you know, 10 people how to use WordPress over a 3-month period and just running the same training session over and over again. Mm. And back then, you know, webinars kind of didn't really exist and online video was a bit clunky and the bandwidth wasn't great. And so I thought, I locked myself in my room for about 2 weeks and wrote a written user guide in a Word document and took about 100 screenshots that showed everything you could do in WordPress as a content manager or what WordPress call an editor.
Yeah.
And I saved that as a PDF and I flicked it up to my buddy Brian in Sydney and I said, hey man, you use WordPress, check this out. You should just give this to your clients instead of, you know, training them and hopefully they won't ask any questions. I gave it to my client and they just loved it. Then Brian rang me back and said, man, we should make this a plugin and we should make videos. And I said, well, do you know how to make a plugin? And he said, I reckon I can figure it out. I said, well, I reckon I can figure out how to make videos. So you make the plugin, I'll make the videos. And I said, okay, no worries. So, and at the time, I think Vimeo Pro had just come out. And that Vimeo Pro allowed you to upload videos for commercial purposes, because before Vimeo Pro, it was just for, you know, you couldn't upload commercial videos and you couldn't make videos private for particular websites. So we didn't really have a solution, but Vimeo Pro just came out, which was the perfect timing for us. So I just went and made all these videos and again, kind of systemized the, documented the process for making the videos so they were all consistent, uploaded them all to Vimeo, and Brian worked out how to put them all in a plugin. And then we just gave that to our clients and said, here you go, this is how you use your website. And they were just blown away. And then we decided to put it up online and start selling it to other WordPress developers to help them. And it became, it slowly built and became a recurring revenue stream in our business.
Yeah, I remember discovering it, I think was 2009, was it around then? Yeah.
Yeah, so we launched in 2008, yeah.
Okay, yeah, it may have been 2008 because it was very early on when I was building WordPress sites and I had probably about 3 or 4. And like you say, you know, I had people ringing me up all the time. I've messed this up. How do you do that? I've forgotten how you upload an image. I've forgotten how you do this. You know, and I saw that come through. It must have been through an email or something. And I took a quick look at it and I thought, oh God, this, I've got to have this. Yeah. And I went and installed it in all the websites I had straight away, you know, the existing ones. And it was just before Christmas because I remember I sent out an email to all my clients and I said, this year I've got a really special Christmas gift for you. It's in here, here's where you go to. And I did my own little video. I said, here's where you find this stuff. And you now have, you know, this video series and user manual and everything. And, you know, you can do all that stuff now. So it was really
great. Yeah. It's really interesting to hear. It's really interesting to hear stories of our customers that actually use it in real life, because it's kind of weird, even though like we've got hundreds of customers all over the world, I still kind of get, you know, stuck in my own little bubble where I think we're the only ones that use video user manuals. So it's kind of weird when you hear someone else using it, it's like, oh, right, yeah, people are actually using this product.
Yeah. Do you know how many downloads you've had?
I don't know off the top of my head, but I do know that that Video User Manuals is installed on, I think it's about 30,000 websites around the world, so split across all of our different customers. So, but I'm not actually sure the number of times it's actually been downloaded. I probably should know that, but I don't. Yeah, Brian would know that off the top of his head.
Yeah, well, we always put it in as a standard, so it's part of the training process.
Yeah, good.
Yeah, it's a great product. So So when did you decide that you needed to do more than that?
Well, I had a consulting business. I had a web design agency. We were just doing client services, and I had video user manuals with Brian. That was this product business that was kind of ticking over, and we were just doing it part time. And I had a meeting with my mentor Ed Dale at the time. This was kind of mid 2012, and I said, you know, I was just really unhappy in my client services business for a whole number of reasons. And it was all my own doing, really. I'd kind of built this business that just made me miserable. And Ed said to me, you know, and then every time I spoke about video user manuals, my eyes would light up and I'd get really excited. And Ed just said to me, you know, dude, what are you doing? Just focus on the one thing that you really love the most. And it became really obvious. So I Left that meeting, I called Brian and I said, mate, I'm in full time. I'm going to get out of my web design agency. I'm going to dissolve that partnership and we're going to go full time because this is what I really love doing. And so that was music to his ears. And then so pretty much the first thing we did is early 2013, I looked at our database and said, hang on, there's about 10,000, well, at that point there were about 8,500 people on our database. And I don't know, 700 or 800 customers actually using the plugin. And I thought, what are the rest of you doing? Like, because our database was built by people signing up for a free ebook that we give away, three free ebooks that we give away. And I know that the ebooks are great because we get good feedback on them. I thought, hang on, you've signed up for the ebook and you haven't bought our software. That's okay. I'm okay with that. I just want to know where the disconnect was.
Yeah.
So I sent out an email just saying, hey, you know, what's going on? Where are you guys at? What were you looking for when you signed up for our ebook? Why haven't you bought the plugin? And they all came back, well, 450 of them came back with the response in my inbox and said, we need more clients. If you can show us how to get more clients and grow our business, you know, we'd love to be able to use your plugin and we'd love to pay for other, you know, software as a service apps online, but we just don't have enough cash flow because we don't have enough clients because we're still freelancing and we're not quite there yet. So that really was just listening to what our customers wanted. And I said to Brian, I reckon we should just sell tickets to one webinar and teach them how I ran my agency and how we got clients and how we manage projects. And if enough people turn up and they like it, then maybe we're onto something. Maybe we can turn this into a business coaching program. Mm. And so that was why we did that. And, you know, it completely shifted our entire business. I mean, WP Elevation is now probably about 60% of our revenue. So we literally doubled our business, you know, within a 2 or 3 week period just by launching WP Elevation in direct response to what our customers told us they wanted.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's about three or four really important points in all of that. And I really like that story because it's kind of the lean startup model, isn't it?
Yeah.
And it's like the first important point, I think, is, you know, you need a good list. And it amazes me always that, and in fact, I had a discussion yesterday with somebody that I'm about to write a proposal for, and it was like, well, what are you doing to gather emails and so on? Oh, I'm not into sending emails to people and so on. So, well, hang on a minute. So having a good list is really, that's a huge asset for a business.
Definitely. I think it's the most valuable asset in any business, whether it's an email list or whether it's in the 80s and the 90s, it was an ACT database. You know, everyone used the ACT CRM software, right? And if you're like the health of your ACT database was the most important asset in your business. If your ACT database wasn't humming along like a well-oiled German engineered machine, then your sales staff weren't able to do their job and you weren't able to reach out to your customers and you weren't making revenue. So that for me, the modern version of that is a really good, healthy email CRM. And anyone who says they're not into sending emails, I'd say, well, are you not into making revenue? Are you not into selling? Yeah. Are you not into servicing your customers?
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I think it's the most valuable asset you can have in a business is a healthy database of customers, prospects, and leads.
Mm. Yeah.
And then, of course, I interrupted you.
No, that's good. I think that's a really important point. And I think the second thing there is then finding out what they actually need. Where are their pain points? Where are their needs? Where are the gaps? And again, this is the same person I was talking to yesterday around, you know, what services they provide, and they were just so hung up on the service. And I said, no, what problem do you solve? What's the problem? You know, what are people looking for that want to engage your service? But it was sort of always around from the service. So asking your customers and finding out always, you know, why aren't you using the product I have, or where's the disconnect, or where's your problem, where's your issues, and then addressing those with a product and doing it in a way that, and I think this is what you did. You sort of tried it out on a small scale with the webinar and then built from there.
Well, there's two things that I want to touch on. First of all, the reason that you can't just focus on your product or your service anymore and think, well, you know, if we just keep doing what we've done for the last 20 years, we will, you know, it'll work. And that might work in some industries, but the reason things have changed is because of the internet, we can now track and understand and measure the language that customers are using to try and solve their problems or achieve their goals, right? And the smarter, savvier startups are using that information to reframe and reposition their service offering to speak to that exact audience. So for example, if you've got, you know, a project management system that does a great job and you just call it, you know, project management 2004 or whatever it is, and someone else comes along with pretty much the same piece of software or the same system or the same IP, but they're packaging it as, you know, helping startups accelerate their growth. And that's actually what startups are looking for. They're looking for growth hacking systems. Then they're going to win the game because they're talking the language of the customer.
That's right, yeah.
And if you just keep, you know, saying what you've been saying for the last 20 years and you don't adapt your language to your customer's language, then there's going to be a disconnect between what you're offering and what your customer wants. The second point there is the way we tested WP Elevation, we absolutely followed the lean startup model, which was to test if anyone actually wanted to buy this before we built anything. And it was pretty easy in our case because it was a, you know, we didn't really know what WP Elevation was, right? We just knew that they needed help. So the quickest way for us to do that was to sell tickets to a webinar. And I hadn't built the webinar. I hadn't even opened PowerPoint to build my slides. In fact, I don't even think I had an account with GoToWebinar. I know I had opened an account with GoToWebinar, and I just put up a landing page and connected Eventbrite to GoToWebinar and said, right, well, if you buy a ticket on the website through Eventbrite, you'll automatically get registered on the webinar. And when enough people bought it, I went, right, I better open PowerPoint now and build my slides and work out what's going to be in the webinar, because enough people have bought this that it's a proof of concept and we're up and about. But I didn't want to waste any time building an amazing presentation if three people were going to buy it, because that's just a waste.
Yeah, there's a big lesson in that, sort of test it out, find a way to test it on a small scale with little investment, and then move on from there if it's not working, or if it is, then you scale it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. So what happened after the webinar then?
So interestingly, you know, one of the things I've learned about webinars is that, you average about 30 to 35% attendance on a free webinar.
Yeah.
Well, we sold 84 tickets to that first paid webinar and 78 people turned up, which is just ridiculous. Mm. You always get a higher attendance on paid webinars because people have actually paid money.
Yeah.
But the six people that couldn't make it actually emailed me in advance and said, oh, I can't make it because I've got to pick the kids up from school.
Yeah.
So it was an amazing turnout, and I just taught my face off for 2.5 hours or however long it was about everything I knew. And afterwards, and the engagement was really amazing. The comments and the engagement and the Q&A at the end was just really, really humbling that everyone was so engaged. Immediately after that, I sent out a survey via, I think I used WooFoo to send out a survey to everyone who registered. So 84 people who bought a ticket got a survey. And 55 of them responded to that survey and filled it in. And the survey basically said, well, that was awesome. What do you want to do next?
Yeah.
You know, do you want another webinar? Do you want a series of webinars? And it was just tick boxes. So they didn't have to write much. I just gave them options, made it really easy for them to give me feedback. Do you want a webinar, a series of webinars? Do you want a mastermind group? Do you want to go to the Philippines for a week and have a mastermind group? Do you want monthly coaching calls? Do you want a members forum? Do you want a Facebook group? What do you want to do next? And they filled that in, and then I got about five or six of them on Skype and had a conversation and said, hey, if we build this, what does it look like? What does it need to include? And what's the price point? And I had five people say, this is what we want included. And if it's, you know, between $1,200 and $1,500 a year, I'll sign up right now. And I said, great. I'm coming back to you in 2 weeks' time, and I'm going to take you up on that. So I essentially, without getting the money, I essentially got pre-orders from at least five people. And interestingly, we launched it about 3 weeks after that. I opened the doors for 4 days and we got 55 people to join in those first 4 days. They weren't the same 55 people that filled in the survey, but that was, okay, for some reason, that was a magic number. 55 people joined in the first 4 days that we had the doors open. And you know, we were up and about. It was live. We were there.
Yeah. And it's just gone on strength to strength from there.
Yeah.
And with additional stuff being added, and you know, as a member of that community, I can say that, you know, you're still following that same model, asking people what do they want, so on. There's you know, posts in the forum that are saying, you know, do you want to see this topic covered or that topic, and
I mean I see our job is to facilitate, I mean our job at the moment, so our job is to facilitate our community to become the best they can be at what they do. And part of that at the moment is that we're teaching a lot of it, but we are bringing in other subject matter experts to teach the stuff that, you know, people who are better than us at doing certain things, we bring them in. But our job really is not to prescribe, you know, not to prescribe everything, but to really listen to the community and say, hey, you know, what do you guys need? What do you guys want help with? And who can we bring in to help you with that? So we're really active in listening to what our customers are asking for.
Yeah, that's really great. And the other part of it that I really like is that forum itself. I mean, did you foresee that forum becoming such a valuable asset for everyone?
It's really interesting because we had these, the first five people that I got on Skype said, oh, we really want a members forum. And so I noted that down, but what I'd actually written down was private Facebook group.
Okay.
Yeah. I thought that's the way we'll run that because everyone's familiar with Facebook. And I spoke to my business partner about it and he said, no. He said, we have to have a members forum in the website. And I said, really? Like before WP Elevation, I'd hardly ever used forums. Right? Yeah. I thought forums were a bit kind of creepy. And I said, really? And he said, oh yeah, we've got to have a members forum in the website. He said, that makes perfect sense. And I said, okay, man, like, I don't know if anyone's going to use it, but okay.
Yeah.
And I reckon now, you know, well, we know that people who join WP Elevation and leave within sort of the first 3 months aren't active in the forums. They're not in the forums. They're not part of the community. Yeah. So I know now that the forum is absolutely, you know, one of the most valuable parts of the WP Elevation membership is sharing ideas and sharing success and sharing stories and struggles with the rest of the community. Yeah. And especially for freelancers or solopreneurs, a lot of us work from home or work from small offices and we kind of get stuck in our own bubble, and it's really important to be able to reach out and connect with other people who are in a similar situation. So yeah, I didn't see that one coming at all.
Yeah. No, I think that's a really hugely valuable resource. And certainly personally, I mean, that's one of the first things I do of a morning. I've sort of put email aside to the end of the day, except for that one email that gets me at the link into the forum, the new forum posts, and check that out. And I feel a bit guilty because I've been very busy in the last few weeks and I haven't been as active as previously, so I sort of read stuff and feel guilty that I don't take the time to actually, you know, contribute as much as I have been.
Oh well, you've been a great contributor over time. In fact, it's funny, you know, because we're actually I'm totally going to put you on the spot here, we're actually rewriting the welcome email for when people join WP Elevation.
Yeah.
And I was going to ask you about this if it was okay, so I'm just going to ask you now. In the welcome email, I actually want to put a link to say, go and check out the forum, and in particular, read Jürgen's success story in the forum.
Okay.
And reach out to Jürgen and say hi, because he's one of our really good members. And so, you know, I hope that's okay if I put that in the welcome
no,
email.
No, that's fine, yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. No, that was quite amazing because, you know, and for our listeners who aren't WP Elevation members, so what happens is there would be every second week there's a webinar or one of them is a presentation webinar, so it's where Troy or somebody, Troy brings in, teaches something, and it's a particular aspect of the business. And at the end of that, there's always the call to go out and implement that, take action on it. And the other one is kind of a mastermind session, question and answer session. But again, it's usually revolves around problems or issues somebody's having, and then it's a call to implement it. And on one of these occasions, I kind of actually was in a position of having to run some workshops that I'd committed to. And the training just before that happened to be around using webinars, workshops and so on to generate new business. So I sort of structured my whole workshop and the whole lead up to it and the follow-ups in that manner, and of course, blow me down, I was flooded with business after that. And of course, I was so pumped that I went and shared that on the forums, and I kind of explained exactly what I'd done in terms of the steps. And the interesting thing is everybody's really chuffed, you know, everybody gets on and say, oh wow, that's fantastic, and you know, and then other people come back and say, oh yeah, we've done something as well, and share another success story, and you kind of learn off one another. And the other thing about the forums, of course, is if you do get stuck on something, you can post it and people will actually you know, point you in the right direction, or even you know, people actually reach out to you and say, send me a private message, or get on the phone, get on Skype, and I'll help you work it out.
Yeah. So yeah, it's quite an amazing little community, isn't it?
Mm.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. So let's get back to you then. What do you, so what do you tell people when you meet them for the first time and they say, what do you do, Troy?
I usually tell them I'm a drug dealer. I usually look, if my wife's anywhere nearby, I usually say, I don't know, do you want to explain it? But if I do have to explain it, I say we help WordPress consultants build the business they need to support the lifestyle they want. That's our why. That's what we're really passionate about. And if a lot of people don't know what a WordPress consultant is, so I say, well, they're a web consultant that specializes in a particular tool or a particular piece of software that we use. And it's interesting because some people, very few, but some people will say, oh, how does that work? Tell me more. And then I kind of explain what we do. And most people kind of don't, you know, most people aren't sort of interested because they're not in the space or they're not in the industry. And that's totally fine with me because I don't want to have a conversation about what we do to people who aren't interested. I'm especially if you're at a large networking event.
Yeah.
If you're at a large networking event, you know, everyone's just kind of out for themselves and out for kind of working out who they can connect with. And I don't want to connect with the wrong people at a networking event, because then you just have to field all these kind of incoming inquiries about whether you want to do a JV here or partner here. Or, and it's like, well, if you're not actually talking to WordPress consultants and serving WordPress consultants, then we're probably not going to be a good fit for each other. So I like to tell them really specifically what it is I do, and if their eyes glaze over, I'm kind of really happy just to move on, you know?
Yeah, so it's very specific. You define your niche very specifically and how you help them.
Yeah.
The fascinating thing, though, is, and I was kind of conscious of this yesterday, I met with another chap yesterday who's focused on business coaching for companies that want to do growth, but his background's in franchising. And he was telling me about how, you know, he's got all this experience and people sort of count on him for experience, and he loves doing presentations. He doesn't do many of them. And I ended up advising him to start a podcast, you know, because we were talking about website and that. And I thought, the philosophies and the principles around what you're doing at WP Elevation are actually, you know, fundamental business principles. If you strip back the technical bits and say, well, what's behind that? What's the principle there? It's applicable to all business.
It is. And it's a really interesting point you make because, you know, we've thought about this a lot. You know, in fact, before WP Elevation, I started a membership site called Online Marketing Masters, which was kind of the forerunner to WP Elevation. And the reason that failed is because I didn't know who my audience was, and I was trying to kind of teach small business owners about how to become an online marketing master. And it was, would have been, ended up being a lot of the same sort of, you know, kind of content, authority positioning, podcasting, you know, streamlining your customer experience, all that kind of stuff. But the problem with that is that, you know, and it's like when you say to most small business owners, who's your, especially in the service industry, who's your target audience? And they say, so if you say to a web designer, who's your target audience? And they say, oh, everyone. My question is, oh, is everyone going to pay you for a website? Is everyone that you meet going to pay you for a website? Well, no, of course not. Okay, so who's most likely to pay you for a website? Oh, well, you know, we kind of do a lot of work in financial services. Right, now we're getting somewhere. Because you can't market to everyone. It's just impossible. I mean, where is everyone? Whereas if I want to market to accountants, I know exactly where to find them. If I want to market to WordPress consultants, I know exactly where to find them. And the reason that we market to WordPress consultants is because we are WordPress consultants. So it makes perfect sense. We understand the struggle, we empathize, and we've actually got the results in our own business. So, you know, it's interesting that what you say is a lot of what we teach and a lot of what we facilitate is kind of fundamental business stuff. But the reason we focus on WordPress consultants is because that's who our audience are, and we know where they are, and we can get in front of them pretty easily.
Yeah, yeah, and you speak their language, and they can understand you. And
yeah,
yeah, yeah. That's a really important point as well.
Mm. Mm.
All right. So, what do you spend most of your time doing day to day these days?
Oh, what do I spend most of my time doing day to day? At the moment, I'm looking for a new office.
Okay.
That's what I've been doing the last couple of days.
Looking to move.
Yeah, we're kind of, well, they've kind of put a personal training studio on top of us here, and it's a very noisy. Oh. So we're kind of on the move here. But I spend most of my time podcasting. So I spend most of my time, you know, interviewing people on a on our podcast, creating content for WP Elevation. So creating webinars, trying to partner with other people to create content, putting together coaching calls, coaching clients. I've got, we've probably got half a dozen platinum members in WP Elevation now, and I've got a handful of other private coaching clients that I coach through general online marketing stuff. Mm-hmm. We still do a little bit of client services, so occasionally I'll be actually working on a website for a client and sort of thinking about, and also I do spend a fair bit of my time working with Jin, who's my assistant here in Melbourne, and our staff in the Philippines, to work out what part of our processes and systems are broken, which means they can't do their job. So I'll spend a fair bit of time, Jin will just, you know, bail me up every now and then and say, I've got five questions I need answers to. And I'll say, righto, hit me, you've got 5 minutes. And she'll ask me the questions and I'll go, righto, that system's broken. And then I'll dig in and I'll try and work out and maybe shoot some new videos and rewrite some processes so that the team can do their job, so that I can get on with kind of thinking about more of the high level strategy about where the business is going and what we want to do over the next 12 months.
Hmm.
Yeah, so kind of a bit of a mixture.
Yeah. Yeah, that's an interesting point you make about the processes and how, you know, if you have robust processes, then, you know, you can get other people to do the job. And we're certainly doing a lot of work on that. And in fact, you know, recently we had a new guy working for us a little while, and we basically gave him some tasks to do. And the person managing him came back to me and said, oh, look, he messed up on this and, you know, I'm really disappointed. And I said, no, hang on. That's actually quite exciting because, you know, what did he mess up on? And they said, oh, he was setting up this, you know, this process. And I said, yeah, which step did he mess up on? Oh, I don't know. Okay, go back and find out which step he messed up on because the process is broken.
Yeah,
he messed up. Yeah,
that's right.
So, yeah, it's...
That's really... the first thing I look at when something goes wrong. The first thing I look at is the process because, staff... You know, a lot of the time staff can fill in the blanks, but there are some times where staff just can't fill in the blanks, especially if it comes to technology.
Yeah.
So if something goes wrong, like, I mean, we've had email invitations for webinars go out, you know, three times with the wrong date in it. And, you know, our audience are very forgiving, thankfully. But I just look at that and go, well, it's not the staff's fault, it's the process's fault. And ultimately, I wrote the process, so it's my fault. I need to rewrite the process and make the process more solid and more robust. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just going to have to end up doing it myself.
Yeah.
So it's my job to get the process right.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I was sending out one of my processes to someone because I offered to share it. I was sending it out to him and I kind of looked at it again. I thought, hang on, that's not what I do when I do that step. So I went through and rewrote it.
It's really interesting too, actually. You've just touched on a very interesting point. If you share your processes with other people, it kind of eliminates the BS factor. Like, you can look at one of your processes and go, oh, yeah, it's pretty good. I know what to do there.
Yeah,
but if you share it with someone, you know, outside your business, it forces you, like, you don't want to be embarrassed. You don't want to send them a process.
Yeah.
It's like, what the? So, I'm a big fan of sharing things outside the business because it forces you to have a look at it and tighten it up so that you're then proud of it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Mm.
All right. So what are the biggest challenges then within your business? Is it sort of getting those processes right, or is it scaling up with staff?
I think probably the biggest challenge I've got is identifying what the most valuable thing is that I can be doing, you know, today and this week. And that's something that I, you know, have struggled with for a long time. I get distracted by opportunities, as we all do. Luckily, I've got a business partner who's pretty, you know, good at keeping me on task. So that probably the most challenging thing the biggest challenge we've got at the moment is scale. How do we take what we're doing and scale it up? Mm. And how do we do that and avoid getting distracted by, you know, because we get emails on a daily basis from people who want to partner with us because we've got a good audience and a good community, and we're just constantly saying, no, not now, put it on the shelf, come back to us in 6 months' time, we might be ready. So that's probably one of the biggest challenges is just managing scaling and managing that growth so that we can, you know, stay true to what we're doing and keep the service offering as good as it is, keep the product good. Just kind of managing those growing pains.
Hmm.
Hmm.
And you mentioned earlier you have a team of stuff in the Philippines as well. So that's, I would imagine that's quite important to the whole operation, right?
It is. I mean, employing staff in the Philippines has allowed us to grow to this point. I mean, there's no way we could afford to employ three staff in Australia the way we have in the Philippines. And those staff have allowed us to generate the profit that we need to actually get to the point where we are now. And we're now starting to employ staff locally. But that has its challenges. I mean, time zones, language, culture definitely has its challenges. We use project management software to manage them. But one of the biggest challenges that we've got now is actually trying to encourage our team to take more initiative, and but also giving them clear parameters about what that initiative means. Like, because their version of initiative is very different to ours. If we say, you know, take some initiative here, they come back with an idea and you think, wow, I would never have thought to do it that way.
Yeah.
But that's okay. They just don't exactly know. I haven't told them the destination clear enough. They don't know where we're trying to go. And so that's a good idea. It's completely wrong for what we're trying to do, but it's not their fault. It's just because we haven't painted the picture clear enough and they don't really understand what it is we're trying to achieve. So that's, you know, again, I'll look at that and think we could be managing our remote team a lot better, and that's something that we're constantly working at improving.
It's really become popular to have outsourced workers in other countries where the cost living, first of all, is a lot less, so that you can pay them a lot less and they still have a really comfortable existence. They're still really really comfortable and well off, and like you say, that gets, you know, small businesses into a position where they can grow to a point of employing locally. There's a lot of negative comment around on some forums on the internet and that about that whole movement, but I think it's a case of if a business is going to expand and grow, that's kind of a first step to the point of then employing local staff.
Yeah. I mean, I love negative feedback about outsourcing, because the first question I ask anyone who says anything negative about outsourcing is, have you ever done it?
Yeah.
You know, have you ever managed a remote team? And if they have, then I'm more than happy to have a conversation with them. But if they haven't, then I'm not interested in having a conversation with them, because it's just all opinion, you know. And it's not right for everyone, but as I said, it certainly allows small business to keep their labour costs down. We pay our team very well for Filipino standards. Mm. So, you know, they're very well looked after, and they're earning more from us than they would be if they worked in a, you know, call center, for example. Yeah. But anyone who's got a problem with outsourcing, I just say, what kind of phone have you got in your pocket? Where's that bad boy made? It's not made in Los Angeles, is it? It's not made in California. No. It's made in China.
Thailand or something.
Exactly. So, you know, the outsourcing argument's just, I mean, it's not even an argument really for me.
Yeah. Okay. So what do you see? So what are some of the ways you do innovation within, you know, the businesses?
That's a really good question. Probably the cloud-based software. It's funny, I was just looking at a new office and there's a whole corner of this office that's partitioned off with a door. And I said, oh, what's that? He said, oh, that's your server room. Oh, right. I said, oh, we'll just take the partitions down. We don't need a server room. We don't have any servers. And it's just interesting. It's just funny because everything we do is in the cloud. It's in Dropbox pretty much. And it's just interesting to see the kind of old school business model. So I guess the cloud-based software that we use, it's pretty much a prerequisite. Anything that we use in the business has to be accessible online, because we are remote. We're a remote team. My business partner's in Sydney. I'm in Melbourne. Our team's overseas. And I think that allows us to move pretty quickly and pretty inexpensively. Like, we can try lots of things out really quickly, and if they fail, then we just get rid of them. If they work and they add value and they increase our productivity, then we keep them. The challenge with that is that we end up trying more stuff than we need. That's my fault. Distracted by shiny objects on a daily basis, and my business partner's always just telling me, no, don't sign up for anything new. We use things like, I'll give you a specific example. We use Amazon AWS, which is Amazon Web Services. We use Amazon AWS to deliver all of the videos that are in our Video User Manuals plugin. So if you imagine, you know, 30 or 35,000 domains around the world accessing those videos on a weekly or monthly basis, our hosting costs would go through the roof.
Yeah.
But hosting everything on hosting all the videos on Amazon now allows us to, you know, deliver that product at, you know, at the cost is negligible. It would be less than a carton of beer every month for our video hosting costs, which is ridiculous. And we service hundreds of customers all over the world. So that's just one example of thinking like a lean online-based startup rather than a traditional kind of, you know, traditional business model.
Yeah. Yeah, that's and of course, Amazon's not a small company, is it? So
no.
It'd be pretty reliable. And
yeah, I mean, and, you know, I mean, Foursquare, I mean, occasionally it goes down. Foursquare, the local-based social network website is completely built on Amazon. And Amazon went down for, I think, 24 hours or 48 hours last year sometime. And I mean, Foursquare was completely offline for a couple of days. They couldn't do anything because their entire business is built on Amazon, or at least it was back then. So yep, you're definitely taking risks, but you know, I have more faith in Amazon to be able to run hardware than our team, you know, with all due respect to our team. Yeah. We're not in the hardware business.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. And also, yeah, I mean, the resources and the infrastructure that they've got in place, and they've got, I think they've got about 4 or 5 locations in the world where they've got, you know, redundant servers and so on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. Well, what do you see as the risk and opportunity cost then of sort of trying to get out there and do things differently? And
I mean, the risk is always that you know, if you're investing in other people's technology or you're using other people's technology in your business, the risk is that they might not be around in, you know, 2 years' time. And if you get into bed with them, so to speak, and build your business on someone else's technology, then, you know, you could be in a bit of strife. The opportunities are, I think, are huge because it allows you to run experiments really quickly. Like you can literally, you know, set up a website, put up a landing page, you know, drive some traffic to it, whether it's from Facebook or Google Ads or your own internal list, and kind of prove, test a hypothesis. Yeah. Will this part of the business work? Are people interested in this? You know, 3-4 years ago, that might have taken a week to kind of get that all up and running. And now you can do it in a couple of hours. So I think the opportunity far outweighs the risk, but I think you do have to be aware, you know, my business partner is really good at doing risk analysis and saying, well, if we do this, this is everything that needs to happen. Whereas my gut reaction is to just pull the trigger and then see what damage I've done and then go and fix, you know, then go and put the fires out quickly before anyone notices. Always ask for forgiveness instead of permission, as the old adage goes. But I think you do need to strike a balance. You know, I know that's a really boring answer, Jürgen, but... But you do, you know, I think the opportunity outweighs the risk is my message. And I think the technology, definitely the internet technology, should be embraced more than it should be feared.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's, I mean, you raise an interesting point there about, you know, how quickly you can do experiments and the, you know, the data that you can then collect off having a website and analyzing, you know, how many people are visiting that website and what they're doing when they get there is just amazing. And it was fascinating. You know, I'm often asked, because I've got a science background, you know, how did you get into websites? And, you know, that's totally foreign, isn't it? And so on. I say, well, not really, because the way I approach it is, you know, to sort of treat it as doing experiments and testing things out and looking at the data and like you say, you know, draw a hypothesis if that and then test it out, see if it's working and have a look at the data and then adapt from there. So it's, and you can do that very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, imagine in manufacturing, like, you know, imagine, you know, food manufacturers who are thinking about releasing a new line of toothpaste. I mean, imagine if they got that kind of data from customers who were in the toothpaste aisle and they were kind of all thinking, oh, I wish there was a toothpaste that did X. You know, if you could tap into that kind of, you know, tap into those kind of hidden thoughts in your potential customer's brain, I mean, it would just make your decisions so much easier, wouldn't it?
Yeah, that's right, yeah.
Mm.
All right, so let's sort of have a look at your spare time then. What do you do when you're not working and not on the internet doing WordPress or webinars?
I'll paraphrase Bill Ballou, I think it is, that said on my podcast. He said, "You make the assumption that I have spare time, and that there is time where I'm not working."
Yeah.
What do I do when I'm not working? Well, you know, I play. I still play a bit of music with a couple of buddies of mine. We go down to a rehearsal studio every now and then and jam, and it's like it's like a poker night without the poker, really. It's just an opportunity for the boys to get together and let off steam.
Yeah.
And it's awesome. It's so much fun. My wife and I like to, you know, travel a bit. We like to get away for weekends here in Melbourne, and we like to, you know, travel. As you know, we love Southeast Asia, and I just love traveling, you know, in general. And we're both pretty active in terms of, you know, physical exercise. I run a bit and I work out a couple of times a week to try and keep my head, you know, screwed on properly and try to keep my head clear. But, you know, I got to say, I work a lot, and because I love it. I just absolutely love what I do. I don't consider it as work. You know, I just consider it as play. I mean, I just get to play on the internet all day and hang out with these awesome people and, you know, and the bills get paid. So it's just, you know, it's remarkable.
Yeah. Well, my last guest that I interviewed on Monday, actually, and I'm not sure when that's going to be published because I'm about four episodes backlog. But he must be in his 70s now, and he's still working full time. And he says, you know, I am so lucky. And he says, you know, I don't consider it work because I get up every day and I'm really excited to go in and work. So he's a fascinating guy. So
yeah.
All right. So, and I know you do a lot of reading. So have you got any books that you'd like to recommend to our audience?
Oh, yes. I just finished reading Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
Oh, Simon Sinek. Oh, that's a great book. Yeah.
It's fantastic. Oh, it's, you know, there's occasionally a book that comes along. I mean, my wife will tell you I get pretty excited about most things, but, you know, when I discover that occasionally a book comes along that just stops me in my tracks.
Yeah.
Linchpin from Seth Godin was one of them. Getting Things Done from David Allen was another. There's a bunch on my bookshelf here behind me, but Start With Why is a game changer for me. Yeah. It's just, I mean, I've kind of known this stuff for a long time, but just the way Simon lays it out. I strongly recommend anyone, if you haven't read it, read Start With Why by Simon Sinek.
It is an excellent book. It's been some years since I've read it, so I might go and find it again.
No, it's great. It's fabulous.
Yeah, it's a great book. Yeah. All right. So I'll ask the magic wand question. If you had a magic wand and could fix one thing in the business, what would you do?
I'd have more staff.
Yeah.
Which, you know, I mean, we're getting there. It's just we just need to hit certain revenue targets before we can employ more staff. Yeah. But I just know that having a good team and having more staff will allow us to get the things done. Well, essentially, it will allow us to add more value to our customers. And there is so much on our list of things on our roadmap that we want to do with this business and for our customers. And that's just going to come from having more staff to get things done. So that would be the, if I had a magic wand, I would just employ, you know, five people right now.
Straight away, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that sometimes too. I wish I had two or three more people that could do all this stuff, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Got too many ideas on the plate and
just
can't get them done, yeah.
Yeah.
All right, well, let's move on to what I call the buzz, which is our innovation round. So just like your podcast, I think there's five questions and quick answers, and we'll see where we go. So it's designed to help our audience learn about, you know, other people who are innovating and leaders in their field and learn from their experience.
Sure.
So what do you think is the number one thing anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
That's a really good question. I kind of thought about this before when I was looking at the sheet. I think they need to listen to their customers. It's the very first thing they need to do. And find ways of delivering the value in a more efficient way.
Yeah.
But I think the number one thing is you have to listen to your customer.
Okay. Yeah. That's a theme that's coming through really strongly in all that you're doing. So
yeah.
That's really great to tie it in with that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well,
so the next question you could probably answer it the same. What's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas and new products?
Listen to your customer. Listen to your customer and focus on the user experience. Like you really just have to put yourself in the shoes of your customer and say, as the customer is using our product, what happens? And there are so many ways that you can improve and innovate. I tell you, you buy anything from Apple and just look at the packaging. I mean, no one packages and delivers things the way Apple do. And it's packaging, for God's sake. Who cares about packaging?
Yeah.
Steve Jobs cared about packaging. Steve Jobs cared about the user experience. And that's why Apple products, that's why people who use Apple products become, you know, cultish about Apple because the user, because they care about the user experience and it's packaging. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So there are opportunities everywhere to make an amazing user experience. You just have to listen to your customer.
Hmm. Yeah, that's good. And I had the privilege recently of spending a lot of time with Tom O'Toole, and one of the things he said that relates to that was about, you know, price and you know, service and experience, the user experience or the customer experience, in his words, you know, that lingers long after the price is forgotten. So
absolutely, of course it does.
So what's your favorite tool or system for kind of driving innovation or for improving productivity?
Well, at the moment, and this could change tomorrow, or it could change this afternoon.
The next shiny object comes along.
That's right. At the moment, it's Infusionsoft.
Yeah.
So Infusionsoft is, for those that don't know, is a CRM, and it you can't even begin to explain how powerful it is, but it is just helping us systemize our processes and automate a lot of our internal systems. So even, for example, when we publish a podcast episode with a guest, we email the guest the link to the podcast episode so that they can share it with their following. And then 2 weeks later, we email them to remind them to come back and look through the comments and award a prize. Well, that's all automated in Infusionsoft now. So what we do is we add the link to their episode into their customer record card in Infusionsoft. We tag them as podcast guest, and the emails just go out automatically. So it doesn't fall through the cracks. We're not relying on some human to put a reminder in their calendar to email that podcast guest. It just happens automatically.
Yeah.
So Infusionsoft is not perfect, but it's fabulous.
Yeah. And if I understand it correctly, you can actually do conditional things there. So, you know, you can trigger those things to go different pathways depending on what, you know, what events might have precurred
absolutely
that.
Yeah. I mean, the easiest example is I'm working with a coaching client at the moment who's got kind of three major things that she teaches. Let's call them apples, bananas, and oranges. You can send out an email to your entire database that basically says, hey, do me a quick favor. Tell me, are you interested in apples, bananas, or oranges? And each one of those is a link. And based on what someone clicks on, yep, which link they click on, they will be funneled into a whole new sequence where we just talk about apples because that's what they said they're interested in. Now, apples, bananas, oranges all kind of leads to the ultimate sale, which is a bag of fruit,
yep,
but they got there talking about apples or bananas or oranges. So again, customizing the user experience through your marketing funnel, that really excites me. I mean, I'm a geek, but that really excites me.
Yeah, it is very powerful.
It is.
All right. So what do you think is the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
You know, everyone says constant communication. Yep. I'm going to say contact your customer before they contact you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we have a failure metric in our business now that if a client emails me or calls me to ask me how a project's going, we failed.
Yeah.
And guess what? It still happens. Mm. We still fail every now and then. But I like my customers to know that we're working on it and that they can rest easy. So make sure you contact your customers before they contact you.
Yeah.
And I'm just gonna dovetail that something that Ed Dale said to me yesterday on the podcast. One of the best ways to keep a client on track is to not ask them to do anything. Do everything for them, because the moment you ask a client to do something, the wheels are going to fall off, because they're busy, and B, they're not equipped to do what you're asking them to do. And we were specifically talking about creating content for websites.
Yeah, he said, I was just going to say that's an example.
He said, stop asking clients for content. Yeah. They're paying you as a consultant. Just do the content for them.
Yeah.
So I think I'm going to take that on board.
Yeah, well, I was going to throw that very example in, because I think, you know, look, most website developers, whether they're in WordPress or anything else, would probably say, you know, getting the content from the client is the biggest holder.
Yeah, absolutely.
And in fact, I tell people, you know, that usually if you're talking to somebody pre-proposal and they say, well, how long will it, you know, how much is it going to cost and how long will it take, are kind of two, you know, questions they ask fairly early on, and you say, well, you know, we can be pretty quick, but it depends on how quickly you can get the content.
That's exactly
to us.
Right. The answer always is, well, how long it will take depends on how organized you are,
yeah,
and how much it will cost will depend on how long it will take, which will depend on how organized you are.
Yeah. So the last couple of times I've actually gone back and I said, we'll organize the content for you. So I've taken that advice.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
that's right.
Great advice. All right. Well, finally, what's the number one thing you can do to differentiate yourself, or anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
That's a really good question. I learned this from Dan Kennedy. Dan Kennedy says, if you want extraordinary results, do the opposite of what everyone else is doing. And I think it's so true. I mean, and I'll give you one very practical example. And this ties in a little bit with innovation. If a client emails or a lead emails or calls up and says, oh, you know, we need to talk to someone about our new website, most web freelancers will say, okay, no worries. Well, I've got some time next week. Do you want me to come over and meet with you? And, you know, they'll go and have a meeting with the client. And I just don't think that works. I think that model's completely broken. So what I do now is I say, more than happy to talk to you about your new website project. I need to see if we're a good fit for each other. This is a canned response email, by the way, yep, that they get. And that just drives them to a worksheet inquiry form on the website that they fill in. Now, if they fill that in, most people don't. If they fill that in, which is telling in itself, if they fill that in, I'll look through it, and if the responses make sense and I think we can actually hit a home run with this client, I will then email them three times, three opportunities. Next week, Tuesday at 10 o'clock, Thursday at 10 o'clock, and Friday at 1 p.m., I've got some time to meet with you, and usually it'll be online. It'll be an online meeting. Pick your time if you want to get on Skype and chat with me. And I'm just filtering out people who are not a good fit for us, and I'm using technology to automate the whole process. So really, the first thing I get is an inquiry form filled in, and I look at it and go, oh, yeah, I reckon we can hit a home run there. I want to get on Skype and chat with this person. And I flick them a canned response email. I might not hear from them. Mm. If I do, great. I know they're qualified, and I know that we're probably going to have a good time working together. So that's, you know, no one's doing that because everyone's optimistically running around having meetings, yeah, and that's fine. I'm happy for them to do that, but it's not the model that I'm in. And I deliberately chose doing what I'm doing now because no one else is doing it. So that was just a way of differentiating myself. Turns out it's a good positioning exercise as well, but that was kind of a byproduct, really.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
No, that's great advice to sort of do something different, but it has to be something that makes sense, obviously.
It does.
Do it differently to others, yeah.
It's basically the reason that I adopted this model is because it's kind of like the specialist model. You know, you can't just, you try and make an appointment to go and see a kidney specialist. You need a referral from your GP, which means you've got to go and see your GP first, and then the specialist will tell you when your appointment is.
Yeah, yeah.
You don't get to pick your appointment, right?
Yeah. Could I have a meeting with you to find out how much a kidney transplant will be?
Exactly.
Yeah, that's great, yeah. I think someone posted in the forum, I just can't remember the thing, I think it was brain surgery or something, but it was a very humorous kind of discussion around that. Yeah. All right, well, how do you see the future for video user manuals and for WP Elevation? In fact, on the video user manuals, I know there's, you'd be familiar with Sidekick, is it, or Sidekicker?
Yep.
And do you see that as a path where this sort of product's going, or do you see eventually it's something that'll end up in the back end of WordPress?
Look, Sidekicks are, I don't think video user manuals will ever end up in the back end of WordPress because they won't serve up those videos. I mean, they just the economies of scale would be viable to do that for free, but it might be a paid extension. I'm not sure. I might have to email Matt and see if he wants to acquire us.
Licenses,
Matt,
yeah.
I'm coming to get you, Matt. But Sidekick is just a different mode of learning. So Sidekick is these kind of spoken tutorials with kind of hover balloons that tell you what to do next, step one, step two. It's
kind
just a different mode,
isn't it?
Different mode of learning. I think what I'd like to see is and certainly what we're aiming for, is I'd like WP Elevation to become a registered training organization. Mm-hmm. My business partner probably isn't aware of this, so this might be news to him. I'd like WP Elevation to become a registered training organization where, if you are going to start a business as a WordPress consultant, that you go through WP Elevation and you become certified as a WordPress consultant and you put a badge on your website. And I think that will, the aim is that I kind of want to up the game for WordPress consultants and lift the quality that we provide as consultants that we provide our clients. I want our clients to get better outcomes. I want all of our members to run profitable businesses because it's important you run a profitable business, because if you don't run a profitable business, you can't service your clients.
That's right.
So ultimately, I would love WP Elevation to become the go-to place for any WordPress consultant to go through our training and to become certified as a WordPress consultant, just like you would, become certified as a, you know, action coach or whatever, you know, or a
Microsoft
whatever kind of
provider.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. So that's kind of, and I think probably the biggest gap that we've got that we're trying to fill is to provide more software and provide more tools for our members to help them run their business and implement what it is we teach into their business. And that's just something that is going to require more resources for us. And hence, you know, that is why the magic wand is let's employ more staff to get that stuff built, you know.
Yeah, well, that's pretty exciting stuff, actually.
Yeah, it is.
So you've got about 3 weeks to break the news to Brian, because it's probably about 3 weeks before we publish this.
Yeah, that's right. It's fine. I'll just let him discover it in the wild.
All right. So do you see, or what do you see as the future for the industry? I mean, do you see, say, WP Elevation taking on other things than WordPress? I mean, there's a few other systems out there now that are you know, really interesting, shiny new toys. I don't know, you know, they might be coming up. Like, what's the other one? I can't think of its name at the moment. The other blog post thing looks like a really interesting CMS.
Squarespace or Ghost.
Ghost. What I'm thinking of.
So I think, look, like anything, you know, I mean, it's kind of hard to imagine Facebook and Twitter and WordPress not being around, but history would tell us that they won't be around forever.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to imagine that, but you know, I imagine there was a time where people thought, well, the television is going to be around forever and the television screen will be around forever, but television won't be around forever.
It's fast being
replaced by on-demand subscription services. I mean, radio, you know, is dying. The CD, the vinyl, the cassette tape. I mean, all technology will ultimately be replaced by new innovation. So I don't know. I think what won't change is that a successful business needs to work out how it adds value to its customers and how to deliver that value at a profit. And that's something that I'm really passionate about. So whether it's WordPress, whether it's Squarespace, whether it's some new fandangle, whatever it is, I think there'll always be a need to teach creative people how to run a profitable business and how to, you know, have those basic kind of business fundamentals in place.
Yeah, yeah.
So I think that's the space that I'd always like to be in, regardless of the technology. So, does that answer your question?
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Because ultimately, the technology is irrelevant. It's all about people. If Facebook died tomorrow, everyone that's on Facebook would find somewhere else to connect.
Connect. That's right.
That's exactly right.
Because that's the need. Again, coming back to what we were talking about earlier, it's not a forum to publish stuff on or anything. It's a place to connect with other people, isn't it?
Absolutely. That's right. I mean, it's the base desire of any human being. Once you've got food and shelter taken care of, our base desire is to feel connected to our tribe.
That's right.
Anything that helps facilitate that connection, I think, is, which goes back to, you know, the first question, what did I want to be when I was a kid? Well, I wanted to connect. I want to connect with community. I want to connect with groups of people. So I think I'm always going to be in that space.
Okay. And where do you see the Internet of Things going and fitting in with all of that?
Man, you know, I don't know. Someone showed me a new website the other day, or a new app the other day, that is a speed reading app. And these guys have spent 3 years studying speed reading and worked out that the most time spent when you read is actually your eyes moving across the words. So these guys have now developed this app where you just focus on the center of your phone and the letters like spin past the focus. So you don't have to move your eyes. You just focus on one point. And they reckon they can increase your reading speed by like 3 or 4 times.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I think there's a fascinating book written by Thomas L. Friedman called Hot, Flat, and Crowded. And he wrote a book called The World is Getting Smaller or The World is Getting Crowded. And then he wrote a book called Hot, Flat, and Crowded, which is all about how the planet's heating up. The middle class is flattening out because of, you know, everyone in China and India is coming out of poverty, getting online, discovering this middle class lifestyle, and the planet is getting crowded. He poses this amazing vision of the future where, you know, all of our cars and our houses are connected to a smart grid which is solar powered, and that every device we use is only using the power it needs at that point in time to deliver us what we need. And as soon as we've stopped using it, it's feeding power back into the grid from solar energy. It's an amazing vision of the future. I'd love to think that it would happen. I think there are too many vested interests in fossil fuels in the world right now. I don't know whether we'll see it in our lifetime, but I would love to think that, you know, the internet and the way that the internet enables devices and people to connect and communicate, I'd like to think that it will be ultimately used for our good and not our downfall. But, you know, only time will tell.
Yeah, that's right. Well, a lot of that technology actually exists, and I've been speaking with a couple of guests recently. So Jacques Touron from Airbox Lab, who was, I think, episode 7. So they're doing indoor air quality monitoring. But there's a guy that I need to publish soon from Govi Rao from Nevada Technologies, and they were doing they're doing very much energy monitoring, both for energy use and water use in buildings, and that's quite a fascinating story. So the technologies are there, but like you say, there's probably a lot of vested interests that see those things as threats to their existing business. All right, well, let's move on to the competition, and I might put you on the spot here and ask you what you'd like people to do by way of commenting or contribution to for this. But just as a reminder, the prize is a copy of the book, The Year Without Pants. So it's the story of WordPress.com and how that fits in with the future of work, written by Scott Birkin.
Yep.
So it is a fascinating read, lots of lessons there on creativity, on productivity, leadership, and, you know, from the company that powers 20% of the web. And we've been talking a lot about that today.
Yeah.
So do you think?
I'm going to be a little bit selfish here and ask, you know, what is it? So what's the number one thing that the listeners or viewers would like to fix about their current website?
Okay.
Yeah. What is the number one improvement or innovation or the number one thing they would like to fix about their current website that would actually make a difference to their business?
That's great. Yeah. That sounds good.
So. And that way, I mean, we're both in the web space, so that way that gives us a bit of market research, doesn't it?
That's right. Yeah, it's excellent. So what's the number one thing that you want to see fixed or you'd like to fix on your website that will make a difference to your business? So put a comment underneath the video here and I'll get Troy to call back in a couple of weeks and award the prize to the best entry or the most innovative entry. So
we are looking
for innovation there. So if somebody's got some wild ideas or fancy things, I'd love to hear those.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Well, this has been fabulous. I think we've been going for quite a while now, so I appreciate your time.
No problem at all.
So in wrapping up then, what's the number one piece of advice you'd give to any business that wants to be a leader in innovation?
Ignore your competition. Yeah, just ignore your competition.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Yeah. Just don't worry about what your competition's doing. Don't worry about how they're innovating, because if you worry about what your competition's doing and we have competition and we see our competition innovating and doing things and adding new features and new tools, and we kind of go, oh, why didn't we do that first? And we used to. Now we don't. Now I don't even know what my competition's doing. I just don't care. Yeah. I'm only interested in how we can deliver more value to our customers at a profit. That's what I'm interested in. And that's how we'll innovate. We will innovate. We'll continue to innovate to add more value to our customers and maintain a profit. So my number one tip is just ignore your competition and listen to your customers.
That's fantastic. Yeah. And there's a theme there, isn't there? Yeah.
There is. There definitely is a theme, no doubt. Okay. Yeah.
All right. Well, this has been really great. Really appreciate your time, Troy. So where can people reach out to you and say thank you or get in touch or maybe even they want to have a look at the WP Elevation website and explore that a bit more.
Yep. So at Troy Dean on Twitter is probably the easiest place to get hold of me. TROYDEAN and WPElevation.com is where you can check out WP Elevation and TroyDean.com.au if you want to hit me up there via the contact form. But yeah, probably Twitter is probably the easiest place. That's where I'm most active.
All right. Well, we'll post all the links for those underneath the podcast post. And finally then, Troy, Your suggestion on who you'd like to see me interview on the Innova Buzz podcast in the future and why?
I knew you were going to ask this question. And I'm totally unprepared for it. But I think I kind of have been thinking about this. And from an innovation point of view, because I'm kind of in this bubble, in the WordPress bubble, and I don't want to give you someone like, you know, Tim Ferriss is pretty obvious, but I want to give you someone that I think you could actually reach out to and, you know, wouldn't take you 3 years to get them on. I'll tell you what. How about, Colas Taid from Envato?
Oh, Envato, yeah.
So I'll tell you why Colas. Colas was kind of the first digital marketplace. And Envato, for those that don't know, are a digital marketplace where you can, you know, buy, audio files or video bumpers or, you know, website themes or anything digital. And Colas was one of the first guys to create a marketplace where instead of just selling digital goods, he created a marketplace where people could sell and buy digital goods. So he's not selling any of his own product. He's just a marketplace. It's like eBay for digital goods. But he was really the first in that space. He's a Melbourne guy, and him and his wife have grown that company out of their in-laws' garage. They now employ over 200 people. They've got an amazing office here in Melbourne. And I think he would, and I've interviewed him, and I think he would be fascinating. And I actually think he'd be interested in not talking about WordPress or the web, but talking about innovation in business, because he's constantly got his foot on the pedal. Yeah. So. And I'm more than happy to connect you with Colas to make that introduction too.
Okay, well, I'd love to do that. So, Colas, look out. We'll be chasing you for an appearance on the Innova Buzz podcast.
Excellent.
That's great. Yeah, actually, my last guest suggested I interview Neil Diamond, so that was so that's presenting a bit of a challenge.
Beautiful.
Yeah. All right. Well, Troy, it's been a real pleasure to have you on the podcast, and thank you so much for spending so much time with us today. It's been quite a long episode, but it's been fascinating to hear the story of video user manuals and WP Elevation and get some insights into what drives you and the philosophies and the innovation that you do in your business. So thanks very much.
Thanks for having me, Jürgen. I really appreciate it.
Yeah. Bye for now.
Cheers.
Well, I hope you enjoyed meeting Troy as much as I enjoyed interviewing him. The interview went for nearly an hour and 30 minutes. So it was really fascinating to hear from him. And we both obviously enjoyed talking about all things WordPress and WP Elevation and video user manuals. Now, there were some great lessons to learn from Troy in that interview. And, the main theme right throughout the interview was listen to your customers, learn from your customers. And the second one that really resonated with me and is something that's certainly a value of ours is deliver more value to your customers and do it in a way that's profitable, because if you're not a profitable business, well, you're not going to be there to deliver value to your customers anyway. So you do owe it to your customers to be profitable, but deliver more value to your customers and ignore the competition, deliver more value than they would. Of course, you can subscribe to this podcast on both iTunes and Stitcher so that you'll never miss a future episode. And if you're stuck in the rut of everyday life and you're worried about missing future episodes, just subscribe on iTunes, subscribe on Stitcher, and you won't miss any more episodes. Now, the show notes and all the resources and the books that Troy mentioned for this interview are going to be under innovabiz.com.au/Troy Dean. That's TROYDEAN. No dashes, no spaces, no underscores or anything like that. So just innovabiz.com.au/Troy Dean. And of course, remember to leave your comments underneath that post to be in the running to win a prize of The Year Without Pants, the book of the story of WordPress.com and the future of work, as the author Scott Birken puts it. So what we're looking for is for you to tell us the number one thing that you would change on your website that will make a big difference to your business. And that can be as fancy or as innovative as you like. And it is a bit self-serving because it does give us some input as to what our customers are looking for. Now, Troy nominated Collis Taid from Envato to be on a future InnovaBuzz podcast. So Collis, keep an eye on your inbox because we're coming to get you for the InnovaBuzz podcast and really looking forward to hearing your story and learning from all the ideas and the innovations that you've put into place there at Envato and the other businesses that I know you've been involved in. Now, if you like these podcasts, we'd love it if you go over to iTunes and give us a 5-star rating because that helps us rank better. It helps more people find us and helps us get more listeners. And it's really important to me to share all this great information and all these great lessons that we're getting from these innovators in their field, share that as widely as we can and make a difference to as many people as we can. So remember, if you don't innovate, you stagnate. So think big, be adventurous, and innovate on.